is there going to be lots of competition. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 11. Chapter 11 entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwaraka. Text 2. Please read after me. Sa Uchakashe Davalodara Daro Pi Urukramasyadhara Shona Shonima Api Urukramasya Dara Shona Shonima Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute.
No power till 5 o'clock today.
Okay. Dadma, okay. Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute.
Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute.
Yatabja Kande Kala Hamsa Utsvanaha. Yathabja Kande Kala Hamsa Utsvanaha.
Yathabja Kande Kala Hamsa Utsvanaha.
Sa Uchakashe Dhavalo Daro Daro.
Sa Uchakashe Dhavalo Daro Daro.
Api Urukramasya Dara Shona Shonima.
Api Urukramasya Dara Shona Shonima.
Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute.
Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute.
Yathabja Kande Kala Hamsa Utsvanaha.
Yathabja Kande Kala Hamsa Utsvanaha.
Sa Uchakashe Davalo Daro Daro.
Sa Uchakashe Davalo Daro Daro.
Api Urukramasya Dara Shona Shonima.
Api Urukramasya Dara Shona Shonima.
Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute.
Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute.
Yathabja Kande Kala Hamsa Utsvanaha. Sa Uchakashe Davalo Daro Daro. Api Urukramasya Dhara Shona Shonima. Dadma Yamanaha Kara Kanja Sampute. Yathabja Kande Kala Hamsa Utsvanaha. Others, please.
Sauchakashi Davalo Daro Daro.
Sauchakashi Davalo Daro Daro.
Please turn off your cell phones or put them on silent mode. Saha. That. Uchakashi. Became brilliant. Davala Udaraha.
White and fat bold.
Daraha.
Concho.
Api. Although it is so. Urukramasya.
Of the great adventurer.
Adarashana. By the transcendental quality of his lips. Shonima reddened.
Dadma Yamanaha.
being sounded. Kara Kanja Sampute, being caught by the grip of the lotus hand. Yata, as it is. Abja Kande, by the stems of lotus flowers. Kala Hamsaha, ducking swans. Utsvanaha, loudly sounding. Tirtha. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The white and fat bowled conch shell, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers. Please repeat after me. The white and fat bowled conch shell, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of a red lotus flowers. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord is a symbol of the spiritual significance. The Lord is all spirit, and matter is ignorance of this spiritual existence. Factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment, and this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence, and He can manifest His presence in anyone. By ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened, like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramahamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha. I was born into the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes to the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So in this verse and purport, we are reminded that Krishna is God, because He is entering into Dwarka. There's so many different scenes, various pastimes going on, that sometimes, many people who had a relationship with Krishna did not realize He was God, or even if they might have, because Krishna is such the expert actor. He plays His part exquisitely well. Just like when the Pandavas lost a gambling match and they were in the forest, Krishna said, if I would have known about it, I would have been there, I would have stopped the whole thing. He came to visit the Pandavas in the forest. He said, but if I would have known about it, I would have came in and helped you. And everybody was cursing the Duryodhana and saying all kinds. He's played the part of the cousin and well-wisher perfectly, even though as God He could have killed Duryodhana immediately. He could have killed Ravana. But then if He did that kind of thing, then there would be no Mahabharata, there would be no Ramayana, there would be no story. There would be no pastime. which would attract the devotees. In fact, it's because Krishna does these pastimes that we become attracted. But sometimes we forget actually that he's God. We get so much involved in the pastime that we forget he's God. So in this case, because simply by Krishna touching the conch shell, it became conscious. Because it's like Prabhupada says in the purport that matter is only the absence of Krishna in our own mind, you know, in our mind, because that's the meaning of Maya. Maya, that which is not, you know, it's not, it doesn't exist really, because it's only material consciousness. It's our consciousness which is material, not the energy. Because to Krishna, everything is spiritual from his perspective. So we have to remember, you know, if some, I don't know, some skeptic or some materialist was to read this, they would simply say that this is just mythology, it's humbug, you know, stories that you tell children. But no, the first, if we want to make any investigation into the Supreme, the first axiom that Jiva Goswami explains, in the Sandhavas, the first axiom we have to accept before going one step further is that Krishna can do anything. Krishna can do anything. If you cannot accept that, then don't go any further than that. Stop right now. Go home. You know, don't, because you will not be able to understand what Krishna is doing, because he can do anything. I remember when I was first reading Krishna book before I became a devotee, and I was, you know, I remember somebody before I read the Krishna book, somebody gave me a BTG. In those days, the BTGs were black and white. Hand drawn, you know, it was not like it is now, full color press. And so I was reading, and there's a picture, you know, this little boy holding up a mountain. I said, what is all this about? You know, I couldn't relate, you know, a little boy holding up a mountain. And then a few years later, I was reading Krishna book again. We came to the same Leela, and of course, I already read Bhagavad Gita, so I knew who Krishna was. But then I was thinking, how is this possible? And then I was thinking, well, if God can't do everything, if God can't do anything, then how can he be God? You know, that's by definition. God, there's nothing that God can't do. My brother once, when I was first a devotee, my brother tried to, we won't say anything bad about my brother, but he tried to, he's a nice guy. He tried to, you know, because he has a double degree in philosophy and psychology, you know. So he thinks he knows a lot of things. He knows, he told me once, he knows the mind of God just as much as anybody else. So he said, tried to pose a riddle to me. Can God make a stone so heavy that he can't lift it? Right? Can God make a stone so heavy that he can't lift it? That's the puzzle. Like a Zen koan. He's a follower, you know, into martial Zen and stuff like that. So, the answer is yes. Because it's a contradictory thing. If God can make a stone so heavy and he can't lift it, then how can he be God? But by the definition of the word Brahma, Brahma means all expanding. Ever expanding. Krishna is not static. Of course, we could say he's ecstatic, but he's never static. His powers are always increasing. So at the moment he made the stone, he couldn't lift it, but shortly thereafter he had more power and then he can lift it. That is the nature of God. He's inconceivable. He is so inconceivable, he doesn't even know his own qualities. His own qualities are... That is why when he was always wanting to figure out why is it that Radha is attracted to him, because he's not even aware of his own nature, his own qualities, because they're unlimited. Ananta Sesha can speak eternally from infinite number of mouths, glorifying the various qualities of Krishna, and never come to an end. So, that's why at the very beginning, Jiva Goswami says we have to accept as axiomatic that Krishna can do anything. And if we can't accept that, then just shut the book and go home and, you know, take birth again. Now, in the previous chapters, or elsewhere, Kunti also, you know, though Krishna is her nephew, she also explains or acknowledges, worships Krishna as a supreme God. That he is the goal of yoga. He is who the yogis are pursuing. He is, you know, in so many different ways who the impersonalist, into the impersonal Brahman, that everything, all the conclusion is Krishna. So she acknowledges also Krishna's godly, his divine quality, even though he is playing the part of a nephew like this, you know. So she also acknowledges that. So this quality of Krishna is he's got, as explained in the Brahma Samhita, that all his divine qualities, yamshama sundaram, achintya gunasarupam, yamshama sundaram, achintya gunasarupam, that he is full of inconceivable qualities. Now, why did we leave the material world? Why did we leave the spiritual world and come to the spiritual world? Why did we leave the spiritual world and come to the material world? Because we forgot, well, for two reasons. We became envious and we forgot Krishna's God. In the sense that we forgot that Krishna is God and we cannot become God. It's a kind of craziness. Srila Prabhupada explained one time in the garden behind the Los Angeles temple, somebody asked him once, what is the definition of insanity? And Prabhupada said, insanity is the sum total of all stupidity. That's insanity. So, if we were to understand that Krishna is God and that by definition we cannot become God, then we won't become envious of Krishna because it's impossible. So, we forgot, and because in certain parts of the spiritual world that people know that Krishna is God, in Vaikuntha, because it's awe and reverence, the Aishwarya, they know Krishna is God. And other parts, they don't know. But they just love Krishna. But still, some envy can creep in. Whether you know Krishna is God or you don't know Krishna is God, envy can creep in for whatever reason. So then, we have to come to the material world. Then the whole goal of going back to the spiritual world is to relearn this tattva. This tattva that Krishna, what is, it's at the Bhagavad Gita, what is the Bhagavad Gita? Learning five tattvas. Who is God? Who is the soul? What is material nature? What is karma? What is time? That's the basic teaching. Then in Srimad Bhagavatam, you get into different tattvas. So many different tattvas. You have to know the tattvas. You have to know who the players are. Just like there's an expression in America, you need a sheet to know who the players are. Like, I don't know whether it's like an Indian cricket, but you have to know which player is this number. Did they give numbers to the players in the cricket team? Okay, so you have to know who's who. So similarly, we have to know who's who in the spiritual realms. That way we won't make a mistake. We have to know these things. So we don't make mistakes. So we made a big mistake before, so now we have to relearn all these things. And then after we relearn them, we have to forget them. Because, the more of a gradation of forgetfulness, the more intimate is the relationship with Krishna. Like in the Vaikuntha, like in the Dasya Ras, there's a recognition of Krishna as the master. But Arjuna, he just thought Krishna is a friend. He forgot. In fact, when he realized that Krishna was God, he became paranoid. Totally devastated. He was throwing abrasions. He was very upset, I called you my friend. I was sitting on the bed with you. He was all, like that, So he was very alarmed to find out that he was a little familiar with God. So it ruined the whole thing. In fact, he became totally bewildered. His head was spinning. And he just said, oh, please, I can't stand this. Let me see you in your other form. And then, like that, So it has a way of dampening the relationship. Knowing Krishna's all-powerful time factor, people are going into his mouth, getting chewed up. He became a bit frightened. Arjuna became frightened, and he was a great warrior. He killed tens of millions of people, and he became frightened. Or then the Mother Yashoda. She definitely doesn't want to know that Krishna is God. And the Leela, the mud-eating Leela, the Krishna's friends were teasing him, trying to get him in trouble, politics and amongst the cowherd boys. So they claimed he was eating mud. So they were, creating trouble. So Yashoda wouldn't believe him. Even though Krishna said they're trying to get me in trouble. So she looked in his mouth. Then what did she see? She saw the whole cosmic creation. She saw Vrindavan. She saw herself looking in Krishna's mouth. And then she, became a little perturbed. But then when Krishna could realize that his mother was forgetting that she was mother and he's the son, and beginning to think of him in a different way, that he's God, Yoga Maya covered her, and otherwise how she can be mother if she thinks her son is God? It ruins the relationship. So, and to speak of Radha and the gopis, the left wing, the right wing gopis are all submissive, and the left wing gopis are all criticizing Krishna. They can make, trouble for him. Because Krishna likes it. Krishna likes to be criticized by his pure devotees. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a king and a jester. King has a jester. Everybody in his court, is afraid of the king. They can't say anything. They're all yes men. So the king actually has a jester in the court whose purpose is to insult the king. He insults the king, and the king likes it. Prabhupada tells the example of Gopal Ban, who is the pandit, minister in the court of Krishna Chandra in Bengal. So one time, because the court jester is supposed to be the fool of the court, so the king said to Gopal Ban, "What's the difference between you and a fool?" So Gopal Ban carefully measured the distance between him and the king, and he said, "About 6 feet, Your Majesty." And the king was he started laughing, very clever. So, but anybody else would say like that, off at their head. So it's because of intimacy. If he's thinking that he's the king, all powerful, how can I make fun of him? But he's got special dispensation. So the gopis, especially the left wing gopis, they have this special, and Krishna likes it. Krishna likes when Satyabhama, she's a manifestation of Radharani, whereas Rukmini is a manifestation of Chandravali. So Rukmini is very submissive, whereas Satyabhama is just the opposite. Very fiery, feisty. So, anyway, once we understand the tattva, then, and when we enter, we go back to the spiritual world, then we never come back. We never come back. One may say, well, there is a possibility. We always have free will. But we don't come back because, first of all, Krishna guarantees we don't come back. He says that in the Bhagavad Gita. Those who go there, they never return. And then also, there's the reason why it is. It's because, aside from Krishna's guarantee, is that, as my godbrother Satadanya Prabhu once said, explained that the material world is perfectly imperfect. It is perfectly imperfect. It is imperfect so perfectly that once having experienced it, you never want to come back. You never want to come back. There's like no one can, no, I don't want to go there. Because as Manu explains in the Manusmriti, that when a person, by following the Brahminical lifestyle, one comes to the point when one remembers all of their past lives, all of their past lives, not just human births, births as a donkey, births as a worm in a dog's intestine. All of these births, they all come to your mind. You remember all of it, and then you become completely, utterly disgusted. That's how perfectly imperfect Krishna's world is. That there's no, you will not want to come back. And of course, after being in the spiritual world, you see the contrast, the difference. So you definitely don't want to come back. So there's Krishna's guarantee, because he designed the material world such that after experiencing it, nobody wants to come back. Yeah. Though you could if you wanted to, but you don't. So, getting back to how Kunti appreciated, Krishna's being God. Similarly, in the Gita, in the 10th chapter, Arjuna explains that, all the sages such as Asita, Devala, Vyasa, Narada, they also proclaimed that you were God. Now you are telling me the same thing. So once in the Vanaparva, Mahabharata, one time both simultaneously Krishna and Markandeya Rishi appeared in the court, in the jungle court of Yudhisthira, and they asked Markandeya Rishi to speak. Markandeya Rishi was extremely old. I mean, Markandeya Rishi, he lives for kalpas. You know, he lives for he's been through many kalpas, many, you know, years, days of Lord Brahma. He's lived through them all, but he only appears to be a boy of 25. So Markandeya Rishi, he said that this Janardhan here, your cousin, he is God. Then he begins to explain. And a similar description is also found in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how Markandeya Rishi, he was meditating, and you know, Markandeya Rishi is the kind of person who, you know, he lives for so long that they ask him why you don't, you know, make a hut, and he says, you know, the world is temporary. So one time he was going through, you know, through the different yugas, different kalpas, and he was explaining how after the huge devastation, there was no land, there was just water, you know, tamingala fish. He was terrified because there's crocodiles, tamingala fish, sharks, everything going around. And all of a sudden, he saw some brightness, and as he swam near, he saw on this banyan leaf a child with his toe in his mouth. And then, as he got closer, the child inhaled him inside his body, and then there was a whole new world inside, and he went through another yugas, and then he was exhaled back into the water and swimming, and then everything dried up, and that child, that's a Janardhan over here, this is Krishna, your cousin, that's who that child, you know. So he's telling him that, you know, this is God, this person. So Krishna, though he plays so many parts, we have to remind ourselves sometimes of who he is. He is the Supreme Personality. He has all powers. He has all potencies. Nothing that he cannot do. So sometimes we have problems in life, you know. Sometimes we have problems, so we try to solve them in different ways. So sometimes, actually, we should try conventional methods. Like if you have a headache, you should take aspirin. You don't pray to God, you know, please cure my headache. Just take an aspirin. It does the trick, you know. But sometimes things get to a place where no matter what you try, this doesn't work. It's like I do as an astrologer. I recommend remedial measures. But I tell people, I said, don't come to me unless you've tried everything else first. Because unless you've tried other conventional methods, then you're not desperate enough. And you may not be ready to do what it takes otherwise, you know. So, ultimately, the answer is, when you have a material problem, spiritual solutions. Right? Material problem, spiritual solutions. And so many times, this situation has occurred, which is the reason why Krishna appeared in the first place, because Bhumi was having a material problem. All the demons, asuras, they were creating problems. She went to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma and the devas, they went to Sweta Dweep, the Karna ocean, they prayed to Krishna, and he appeared because of material problem. Lord Ram appeared, material problem, Ravana. Yeah? Or similarly, in the case of Vamanadeva, he appeared because Bali Maharaj had stolen the property of the devas, right? So they prayed. Kashyapa Rishi explained to Aditi what she had to do, what vratas she had to do in order that the Lord would appear, so that Lord Vamanadeva would appear, a little boy, a little dwarf. But when the time came, he manifested his supernatural power. Nobody should mistake that little boy was not God, because with two steps he took everything from Bali, and with the third step on his head. So now that we're speaking about Vamana Dev. We also have a little problem on our hands over here in Bangalore. Now maybe I know what I should do. I should end the class now and then talk about what I'm going to talk about. End the class now and I'll take any questions and answers, and then I'll continue with something else leading off from where I just ended. So we have any questions on what we've spoken so far? Yes.
Those who have come to this material world, and then they get qualified to go back to God. They said that they leave this body and they go back to their original Swarupa. That means each one of the living entities who came here, they have their original Swarupa in the material spiritual world.
Yes.
But they don't at all realize it here.
It depends upon your level of realization. For example, the Six Goswamis, some of them were Manjaris, and so in their material form, they're men. But then there's a whole past them when they were meditating, and they go into meditation, and they were in their Saki forms. They're in their Saki forms. It depends upon your level of realization. If you're Jivan Mukta like they are, though they have an because the difference between material and spiritual is just a matter of consciousness. So right in front of us, we're seeing Srila Prabhupada, but who is he really? What is his real Swarupa? He knows what his Swarupa is. Some people speculate he's this, he's that. I don't know. Srila Prabhupada, Krishna knows. No, so that is what a Jivan Mukta is. Somebody who they know what their Swarupa is. But they don't advertise it. They don't have a button, you know, Gopi in the spirit, or I'm a swan. They don't discuss that type of thing. They don't discuss that type of thing. There was one pastime, it's in the biography of Srinivasacharya and those persons that, you know, he was in meditation as a male, but in his meditative, he was trying to help Radharani find her jewel that had fell on the bottom of the kund, and they were like diving, you know, like that, trying to find it. They know what they're supposed to be, but that's somebody's highly elevated. But they don't talk about that. They don't discuss these things in public. They keep these things internal. It's internal. Internal. And this whole explanation of how this works is found also in the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it's chapter 38 or 32. Meditating upon the Lord in the heart. Kapila Dev explains it. After meditating on different parts of the Lord, and he finally comes to the part where he is. You know, his mind is steady, and then he's so intoxicated with love of God that this says that, and just like an intoxicated man is not aware of whether or not he's wearing clothing, in such a state of mind, he is not aware of whether he is wearing a body. And in such a condition, the Lord Krishna himself has to now take charge of the body until the destined activities of that body are completed. And it's in the purport that Srila Prabhupada explains, gives that example of how the fan is turning. You know, so the when he's talking about the destined activity of the body, means the parabdha karma associated with that body, they have to continue. They have to continue. But now the body is going not because the soul is in it, but because the karma is associated. Because even though bhakti, devotional service, is strong enough to destroy parabdha karma, Krishna does not allow it to be destroyed. Although, because if that happened, it's for many reasons, you know, Baladev explained it, it's not practical. As soon as somebody reaches Brahma Vidya, that means they die. The proof that you have Prabhupada Karma is you look in the mirror, you have a body, that's it. That means if Prabhupada Karma is destroyed, your body gets destroyed. That wouldn't be very conducive to preaching. You know, as soon as you attain, as soon as you get initiated, all your karma is gone. And everybody at the initiation ceremony dies. Who's going to be next to get initiated, you know? Nobody's going to be stepping forward, you know. Those Hare Krishnas, everybody, you know. And plus, who's going to be doing the initiation ceremony? That person also would have died. because all their karma would have been, you know, so part of the karma is not get destroyed. But because the person is liberated, as explained in the 6th chapter Bhagavad Gita, verses 20 to 23, or 23, yeah, 20 to 23, or is it 23 to 26, where Krishna explains about how the yogi meditating on his true self in the heart understands, you know, who he is through pure intelligence, and he's not shaken, even in the greatest, in the midst of the greatest calamity, right? He says, this is true, you know, this is true liberation from the clutches of material nature. It's the body, the gross and subtle body is what suffers karma, right? Because of the five tattvas explained in the Bhagavad Gita, God, this living entity, material nature, time and karma, four are eternal. Karma is not. And it only affects the gross and subtle material body. So those who are attached to the gross and subtle material body suffer. But if you're not attached, you don't. So in the many, so many things would be happening to your gross and material body, but you don't care, because you're detached. You know who you really are. But you're like the man, because as it's explained by Kapiladev, the person is so intoxicated with love of God, he's not aware of whether or not he's wearing a body. He doesn't even know if he's got a body. What to speak if the body is suffering? He doesn't even know if he's got one or not. And because Krishna grabbed the wheel. It's like if somebody, you know, driving a car and the driver faints and the passenger grabs the wheel. That passenger happened to be Krishna. He grabbed the wheel and he's driving the car until the destined activities are completed. Just like that fan, so Prabhupada, so the fan is going, you turn the power off. Does the fan screech to a halt? No. The fan keeps turning. Why? Because that karma has been put in motion. And so until that destined activities are completed, the fan still goes. But eventually it stops. And there's no new karma, because there's two categories of karma. Sanchinta karma and Kriyamana karma. Sanchinta is divided into two, Prarabdha and Arabdha. It is the Arabdha karma is what gets burnt to ashes. It's just like wood is turned to ashes by the action of fire. That's Arabdha karma. It all gets burnt. But the Prarabdha karma, that which has already been, like the arrow which has been shot, that has to go until it reaches its destined destination. That doesn't get destroyed because Krishna doesn't want it to be destroyed. But the consciousness, because of the consciousness of the devotee, he doesn't notice it. Or it's like, Bhagavad explained it, just like you take cloth and you burn it. Now if you don't disturb the cloth, you still see the form of the cloth. You still see the folds. Or sometimes you burn a newspaper. You can still read the newspaper, as long as you don't do anything. But as soon as you touch it, it just turns into dust. So that's the saying, that karma is like that. For the nirapeksha, the devotee who's detached completely, it's like that. It's like a container of hing, right? If you take empty the container of hing out, it still smells like hing, doesn't it? But it's empty. But it still has the smell of hing. Because there's certain, even though we're in the process of liberation, of going through that purification, there's still, Krishna's still guiding, not so we don't make the same mistakes. And even when we achieve highest perfection, what happens? Before you can go back to the spiritual world, you have to go to Goloka. You have to go to Gokula Vrindavan and get trained up, isn't it? You don't go immediately to Goloka Vrindavan. You have to go to Gokula Vrindavan first and get trained. So that you don't make any mistakes. They don't want, up there there's no room for mistakes. Mistakes are what you sent down. Everybody up there knows exactly what to do. Down here, there's training process. So it's still, though, you know, that's why persons are called pure devotees, but there's different gradations of pure devotees. They may still have, you know, lower grade, they're like, you know, the unripe mango. There's a mango, but, you know, and then eventually it'll become ripe, but there's a process. Pure, more pure, purest, you know, like that. Does that answer your question?
Speaking about consciousness, how do you feel your own consciousness is my question, and also with that, how do you feel others' consciousness?
Like, well, if you're not conscious, how are you asking me the question? only conscious beings are here. You know, unconscious does not ask a question. Consciousness is cognition itself. It is, you know, it's not a feeling. It's consciousness. Emotion is something that consciousness experiences. Have you experienced emotion?
Yeah.
Then you have consciousness.
You're asking me your level of consciousness.
Another Madhvacharya calls it Shakshi, the witness. The soul is the witness. So you witness. Have you witnessed emotions? Have you experienced emotion? Then you're conscious. That's you are conscious of the emotion. It means cognition. You're cognitive. You are experiencing. You are the witness. You are the experiencer. You are conscious of the experience. That is one of the qualities of the soul. When Ramanujacharya was writing his Sri Bhasya, he had an agreement with his scribe that the Vasula, Ganesh, and Vyasadeva, that the scribe would only write down if Ramanujacharya spoke something correct. If he spoke something wrong, then he wouldn't write it down. So, and of course the scribe was his disciple. Ramanuja was explaining the qualities of the soul, the Atma, and he said, the first thing he said is the soul is cognitive, is cognition itself. And the scribe wasn't writing, didn't write. And then he said, what did I say wrong? And he thought, the first quality of the soul, it is the servant of Krishna. Then the scribe started writing. Is the servant of, and his consciousness itself. So that these are the symptoms of the Atman. It is a servant of Krishna and his cognition. He has the quality of consciousness, of being cognizant, of being aware of things. You know, you're aware.
Awareness is a feeling of
Feeling is the soul being conscious of the emotion. This feeling is the you know, suppose a boy is in love with a girl. This is the feeling of love. So what the soul, therefore, it becomes aware of what happens when the senses meet the sense objects. And that emotion of all these different things. So that's, you become aware of that. Or just like when that bag gets empty and then you become aware of, that's hunger, that's called hunger. We call it hunger, you know. You become aware of that pain. We become awareness, that's consciousness. Any other questions?
I can ask one more
question. Yeah, sure.
You were speaking about consciousness, Krishna's super consciousness expanding.
Yeah.
It's always expanding.
Yeah.
So, because we are all parts of Krishna, our consciousness is also expanding.
Yes.
How much should we expand?
Well, first of all, we have the fact that we are, you know, the more that we expand our consciousness, the less, you know, the symptom is the less materialistic we become. The more we love Krishna, that means an expansion of our consciousness, because then we become in contact with Krishna. When we become, I had this experience before I became a devotee. I was taking LSD. And that was the reason I was taking it was that I had no other process of spiritual realization. I was searching for that. So one time I was at a dance club and I was dancing and I was with a very beautiful girl. And I was looking at her and I was noticing that because I was wanting to achieve like Brahman realization. You know, I didn't know that was the name of it, but that was, and I noticed that as soon as I began to think of this girl as a sexual object, that my consciousness contracted. And as soon as I stopped thinking of her in that way, my consciousness expanded. So that's just, you know, because the consciousness can expand and contract. It's the mind is material. It's a subtle but material element. So it has the quality of expansion and contraction. It's like metal. Metal, when you heat it, it expands. And when you make it cold, it contracts. Right, so our consciousness can also expand. And we see, you know, we can see things differently according to the knowledge that we have. It's like, you know, like one time Subhanjaya was telling me way a long time back, how one time he was with a friend of his from school. They were bicycling, and they came. His friend was the son of a lumber. His father owned a lumber yard. So they came to this stand of trees. So Subhanjaya was thinking how, oh, each of these trees has got a soul in it. And but the son of the lumber, he was thinking how many board feet there was, how much it would, how much profit he could make if he was to cut, you know. His he was thinking of converting it into lumber and selling it, you know, different conscious, which is expanded and which is not. You know, one person is thinking how a living entity is and each one of those, you know, is trapped in it. The other one is thinking, you know, how much wood is there, how much I could sell it, you know, like that. So one is very materialistic and one is expanded. One is very contracted, the other one is very expanded in consciousness. Because the goal is to, you know, our world view is to how to leave this material world. So that's an expand, you know, to leave the material world means we have to expand our consciousness more and more if we want to be in contact with Krishna. Because though Krishna is the supreme Brahman, you know, sometimes people say, well, how will I be able to understand Krishna? Krishna is infinite and I'm infinitesimal. How is it possible? People will say, some skeptics will say, how is it possible? Well, it's possible because Krishna is inconceivable in his power, right? We can't, because if Krishna wants us to, we can understand. Just like it says here in the verse, in the purport, the Lord is present in every particle of all existence and He can manifest His presence in everyone by ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. So, tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam prittipurvakam dadhami buddhi yogamtam yena mam upayantite. To those who worship me with great love and devotion, I give them the intelligence. Because He is all-powerful, He can make you understand. It's like Dhruva Maharaj. He was a little boy, 5 years old. He didn't know the Vedas, he didn't know anything. He couldn't even speak properly. Krishna touched him in the head with the same conch shell. And then he could, you know, he was speaking, you know, so many Uttama Shloka, the highest praise of the Lord. Because Krishna allowed him to do it. It's like, you know, like a banyan tree. A banyan tree is inside of any tree. There's a seed, which is another tree inside of it. Krishna put a whole tree in a little seed. Nothing is impossible for Krishna. So even He can make a teeny little, like, understand Him. But nobody can fully understand Him, because even Krishna doesn't fully understand Himself. Because His qualities are, you know, as soon as Krishna understands Himself, He gets more qualities. Like that.
I feel when I'm taking prasada, my conscious.
Yeah, you want to contract your consciousness? Watch television for a few hours. Then your consciousness becomes totally contracted, you know? Read the newspapers, you know? Consciousness becomes totally contracted. Yeah, just sit down in front of the stupid box for a while, the idiot box, for a day or two, and just see what your consciousness is like. Become completely dull. Totally dull. You know? People think you're a genius. The reason is you didn't watch television. You know? They'll think you're a genius. Any other questions? Okay, the other part. one more question.
What is the understanding for blowing the conch shell?
In this case, well, Krishna is announcing His entrance into the city. He was coming into the city, so he's announcing that he's arriving. It's just like at the beginning of the battle, they blew the conch shells to let people know, okay, now we're going to start. You know, it's like, why do we blow a conch shell before the Arctic's about to start, isn't it? We better hurry up. I'm not there yet. You know, but try to get there before it announces the beginning of something and the end of something. It's an announcement. It's a method of announcing the beginning of or the end of something.
Anything beyond this?
Well, like in the case of, you know, it's one of Krishna's. One of his methods of blessing people. He's got four weapons: Shankar Chakra, Gada and Padma, but two weapons are for blessing and two are for blessing in a different way. Krishna blesses in different ways. Yeah, well, that's why he gave Dhruva. By touching him with the conch, Dhruva became infinitely learned. You know, and by blowing the conches and the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it crushed the hearts of the Kauravas. They lost their will to, they lost their will to fight. Like that. Anything?
One more question. Okay. I understand that. I don't know whether my understanding is correct or not, but I understand like this, that when consciousness identify itself with the material thing, then the mind exists. Then the mind comes to existence. Like now my consciousness identified its body, because of that I got this human mind. Now my question is, will the mind dissolve once the consciousness stop identifying?
No.
Then the ego...
No, we have... In the spiritual body also has spiritual intelligence and spiritual mind and spiritual senses. But it's described in the 11th canto in the Uddhava Gita. Krishna explains to Uddhava how, you know, our consciousness, our spiritual consciousness with its spiritual body, spiritual senses, spiritual intelligence and spiritual mind gets covered with the material. So our spiritual mind is covered with the material. Our spiritual senses are covered with the material. Our spiritual intelligence is covered with material. Our spiritual body is covered. So, like that's where the lust is explained in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. That the enemy, you know, is within. Sometimes, you know, some overzealous brahmacharis, they think, especially in the West, they think that women are evil because they get attracted, so they have some overzealous attitude, but actually it's not the fact. Krishna explains in the third chapter of Gita that the enemy which causes these problems is not outside, it's inside. That lust is lodged in the mind, in the intelligence, in the senses, inside of us. So if we want to find out who the enemy is, get a mirror and you'll find out. We are our own enemies. So the mind is not, you know, the mind is always existing, just that there's the material mind and spiritual mind. That's why Krishna, what does Krishna consciousness mean? Krishna consciousness means the only thing which we can change, the whole enterprise of Krishna consciousness means to put our consciousness in line with that of Krishna's. To realign our consciousness with that of Krishna's. To make our mind the same as Krishna's. That we don't argue with. It's like Pradumna. Pradumna is the perfect example of this. It was explained about Pradumna that if he liked something and he found out that Krishna didn't like it, Pradumna didn't like it anymore. And if there was something that Pradumna didn't like, then he found out Krishna liked it, now Pradumna liked it. He's conforming his consciousness to the consciousness of Krishna. This, like a wife should conform her consciousness to the consciousness of her husband. You know? So the same way, from the example of the wife, we're all subservient to God. So we have to conform, because for the wife, the husband is the representative of God. So it's just practice for her. So in the same way, we have to practice by conforming our conscience to the consciousness of our superior. So we have to please them. So ultimately we have to please Krishna. We have to know what pleases him. That's why we don't just do anything. We have to conform ourselves to him. So the only thing which we can control is how we think. We can't control anything else. There's nothing else we can control. It's how we thought that got us into trouble in the first place. It's how we thought which has got us here. Not something we did. We only thought of it. And got us here. Krishna didn't let us get to the stage of doing some rebellious activity in the spiritual world. He knew, and immediately we were sent here. It was a thought that got us here, not something else. So that's why Krishna explains in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita the necessity of controlling the mind. Isn't it? And Arjuna says, no, it's so difficult. And Krishna says, yes, it's difficult, but it can be done by practice. Because it's the only thing which we can control. There's nothing else which we can control. So that's why in the Shabda Parva, Arjuna explains, when the whole topic was about the Rajasuya sacrifice. And Yudhisthira was wondering, should I not do it like this? You know, what are the obstacles? So Arjuna explains to Krishna and Arjuna, or Krishna and Yudhisthira, the three principles of success. And they are concentration of mind. Then, once you concentrate your mind, persistent effort. Then, the will of God. You know, so first you have to concentrate your mind. You have to have your mind focused, just like Arjuna and the eye of the bird, right? He didn't see anything, only saw the eye of the bird. Then Dronacharya told him to shoot. Everybody else was looking different places. So we have to have we have to do effort. We have to persist in what we're doing. You know, you can think about something, but if you don't do any action, you never get there. You know? Like there's one joke. One Jewish guy, his name is Moshe, he's lamenting, you know, that his neighbor just won the lottery. And he's lamenting, God, I pray to you all the time, you know, but I never won the lottery. I never. And so a voice comes from the sky and says, Moshe, meet me halfway. Buy a ticket. He wants to win the lottery without buying a ticket. At least you have to buy a ticket first, right? Then you can win the lottery. So you have to do something. And then comes the will of God. If Krishna doesn't will it, then it doesn't happen. But we also have to do our part. God helps those that help themselves. So there's two philosophies. There's one philosophy is that the cat philosophy, right? You see the cat is carrying the kitten in its mouth. So we just have to depend upon God, just surrender to God, and everything is up to Krishna, like that. We don't do anything, just like the kitten in the mouth of the cat, right? That's the cat philosophy. We have to just completely, like the kitten, be dependent upon the cat, on God. And there's another philosophy that says no. That philosophy is the monkey philosophy. The baby monkey hangs on to the mother monkey for dear life. The mother monkey is jumping from tree to tree, you know, like that. The mother, you know, by our own action, you know, that's the monkey philosophy. No, by our own action, by devotion, like that, that's how we get purification, that's how we get liberation. But that's not our philosophy. These are not our philosophies. Our philosophy is the philosophy of the man in the well. Right? Suppose you're walking down the street or down the field. Actually, I was reading about that someplace in North Karnataka. This lady was newly married. Her husband told her, go home. She just knew on the property. And nobody could find her. What happened, you know? She fell down a tube well. They found her the next day crying. Now, nobody would have found her. That would have been it. Ready-made grave. So anyway, if you're falling into a well, then what you can't get up by yourself. She couldn't get out. She was stuck. But if somebody comes and they put down a rope, by their mercy, send a rope down, but the rope is not going to be good enough. Unless you grab the rope, then it doesn't matter. They could put all the rope in the world down. Draupadi Sari could be sent down. Unless you actually grab the rope and then they pull you out, then you don't get out of the well. So it's a combination of the mercy of God and your effort. Both have to be there. I mean, in some cases, yes. You know, but most of the time, it's by a combination of both your effort and the mercy of God. Okay, now, I won't take any more questions. Now, we were speaking about Vamanadev and Trivikram. And we have a problem. Everybody must be aware of this case with Madhu Pandit. Right? This whole case and how now it's becoming in the media, which is good. Actually, it's very good. Very good. So, everybody must have noticed that we have Vamanadev on the altar. You know, there's a reason why Vamanadev is on the altar. Approximately a year ago, when I came, we determined that certain things had to be done in order to change the course of the case. And at that time, it wasn't moving very much. So certain remedies were suggested, one of them being the putting Bhavanadeva on the altar, and the other is that daily recital of the Vamana Leela should take place. Because remember, material problem, spiritual solution is there, you know. Spiritual solution. Sometimes people ask us how we could have fallen down from the spiritual world. Example is over there. Yeah. Envy, you know, betrayal, they change their mind. But if they change their mind? You know. So the problem is there. So we want to, by asking prayers, you know, by reciting prayers to Lord Vamanadev from the specific chapters are Vamana Leela is the 8th canto, chapter 11, write this down, chapter 11 plus chapters 15 to 23. Those are the Vamana Leela.
Can you come back?
Canto 8, chapter 11 and chapters 15 to 23. Those cover the Vamana Leela. So just as it says here, you know, that how Arjuna, you know, the Pandavas, they were inspired by Krishna. They were empowered by Krishna to, even though they were outnumbered, they were outgunned, the battle of Kurukshetra, they were able to become victorious. In the same way, we want to help our legal team. In the last year, I thought in the last year there's been tremendous change in the whole case. Everything is turned a lot more favorable in our direction because of these remedies which were performed. 6 yajnas were performed, the installation of Lord Vamanadeva, and plus they have been reciting these prayers, reciting these chapters from the Bhagavatam daily. But you know, we firmly believe in the power of prayer, and that the more persons involved, the better. So they should, before beginning reciting, you can just read the verses, you know, you don't have to read the purport, you can just read the translation, that you should pray to Lord Vamanadev that we win all the cases against Madhu Pandit and get our property and monies returned, which he stole. He stole. And, you know, to every morning, we should, and if somebody can come and also pray in front of Vamanadev, that would be nice. Or at least you can get a picture of Lord Vamanadev put on your altar and recite, you know, those chapters, at least one sloka per day. Or if you can do more, the better. You know, because the more persons who, you know, the spiritual solution to the material problem that we have has been working. I wish that Dhairam was supposed to be here, but you know, so many different things have come into place from so many directions. Now this MLA has complained. You know, some devotees were a little bit worried that this, you know, about this, but you know, we shouldn't be worried. This situation is nothing compared to things which have happened in the past. Nothing, you know, Remember, July 2nd, 1978, I was in Mumbai when a man was killed on our property. If anybody here read Prabhupada Lilamrita? Okay, there's one section where it talks about when Prabhupada had to acquire the property. The owner of the property, Mr. Nair, was a cheater, a thief. So then eventually he died, but he had his stepson named Pushpakant Makre, who was at that time the municipal corporator. And they tried to steal the property. They tried to destroy the temple. They were with blow torches. You know, when Jagat Purusha's mother-in-law from Kerala was stopping him, cursed it. You will die by fire. She cursed him. You'll die by fire. Later, Papa was giving a class, and they heard terrible screaming sounds. The man had contracted cancer, doused himself with kerosene, and committed suicide. That was the sounds they heard. Died by fire. Anyway, after Srila Prabhupada left, this Pushpakant Matre, the I know, somehow related legally or by blood to Mr. Nair, also wanted to try to get the property. So he instigated with some, now there's no Karmis living on our property, but before, because of the laws, we had different flats there, and Karmis were living. Prabhupada had flats built on top of each apartment, and we had like neighbors who were cooking chicken right downstairs on our own property. We couldn't do anything about it. So there was some Gunda who lived at the back, and they had hired him to incite a riot on our property, and they already had hundreds of Gundas ready. So what started it was Chokidas caught a shoe thief. It was on the Sunday. It was July 2nd, 1978. They caught him, and they put a garland of shoes around his neck. And this became the point of contention, that the Matre side tried to free him, and there was like a tug of war between them. Our temple commander, Mahabodhi, came, tried to stop the whole thing. He said, let's go into the foyer and discuss this matter. He walks away, and he hears a sound of a loud crack, like a coconut being broken. What happened is that this Gunda took rebar. There was still a construction site, basically. It was 1970, only a few months since the opening. There was all kinds of rebar laying out. He tried to beat one of the chokidars with it. The chokidar took it and hit him over the head and killed him. And then that was the beginning of a whole riot that took place. They were like something out of a movie. I wasn't there. I was eating Mahaprasadam. I was in charge of the deity kitchen, and I only ate once a day, and I ate quite a bit. So I was in the back in the Brahmachari Ashram, and I was with Kundali, and we went in. We could hear the sound of glass breaking, but we didn't wonder what it was. That anyway, we came back, and it was like a war zone. Every window was broken, all the lights were broken, and that was just the beginning. The next day, they brought the body. You know, there's a roundabout in front of the Mumbai temple, between the two towers. The body was there. The man's mistress was there, weeping, crying. There was thousands of people all over our property. They had, because it was already planned, they had hoardings already up. Come and get vengeance, revenge. You know, they've killed the Ferengis have killed our brother like this. You know, so there was thousands of people. And the oldest, Prabhupada's oldest disciple was there. He was actually older than Prabhupada. He was in his 90s. And he was the retired police chief of Lahore. And he was walking around. He could hear what they were saying. And he told us, they're planning to kill us all. At sunset, they're going to attack a temple. They're going to kill us all. And so, you know, and the whole thing was staged. The police came. The police did a whole, they got all the devotees into one room. And they got the woman, and she just picked up all the managers. Then she picked up Giriraj and Tamal Krishna. The police said, you can't pick them. They were in Ahmedabad yesterday. The whole thing was staged. They hauled them off to jail. You know, Sridhar Swami, you know, Mahabodhi, Mogalila, about a dozen devotees were hauled off to jail. And then I looked outside and told Tamal, you know, we have about half a dozen chokidars with little sticks. And there's thousands of people. So we're in a lot of trouble. Serious trouble. Very serious trouble. These people want to kill us. So we're calling the police for help. We call the police. The police hang up the phone. Then they cut the phone lines. All our life members, they were like, nobody would come close to us. Nobody. Only two life members stood by us. Mr. Desai, Natji, and I can't remember his name now, he was a lawyer. He stood by us. No, everybody else left. You know, like the rats leaving the Titanic. They're sinking ship. They thought we were finished, you know. So then we had to send two devotees to go to the governor of the state for protection. But it was like 20 kilometers away through heavy Mumbai traffic. And in the meantime, things got very, very serious. Very serious. There were like at least 4,000 or 5,000 people on our property who wanted us dead. We were all stuck inside our rooms. You know, if you looked outside, dozens of stones were thrown at us. And, you know, then they finally came. They wanted to meet with Giriraj. They wanted money. They wanted money. That, you know, that we should set up a fund so that the widow gets 1 lakh of rupees per year. To get a lakh of rupees profit, that's a lot of money, you know. So we were stalling for time, and Giriraj told, I agree, it's a good idea, but I'm just one man, a committee has to decide, like that. Just anything to stall for time. And then, about this time, everybody was cursing. I personally cursed this Mr. Matre at this time. And then just as it starts getting darker, they were all like pushing at the doors, at the glass doors, just pushing. Waves of people pushing. Just as the sun had just gone down, it was just starting to get dark. I didn't think I was going to see the next day. Because it was very, just at that moment, and I remember, Prasanatma was leading Nisringa prayers in the temple room, and they were like really upset. Just at that moment, two army trucks drove into the property, and soldiers jumped out with assault rifles and fixed bayonets. And the property was cleared in 5 minutes. But that was just the beginning of a two-month, that was the beginning of a two-month ordeal. The judge stopped them from coming on our property, but then for 2 months, no one came to the temple. Because in every newspaper in Bombay, Marathi, English, Gujarati, Hindi, Urdu, everything English, they were publishing the most outrageous things about us. I'm going to tell you some of the things they said. You're going to laugh because you think it's so crazy. But they actually was published. They were saying that we had underground submarine pens under the temple. The U.S. 6th Fleet had submarines under our temple. That's why we made our temple so close to the ocean. You're laughing. We weren't laughing. This is published in the newspaper. that the chakras on top of the temple were radar and radio beacons so that we could keep in contact with the U.S. fleet. This is just a few years. Before this, they were saying we were CIA agents in the Indian Parliament. You know, so we weren't laughing. We weren't laughing. They were saying police neither confirm or deny that they found 23 wireless radio sets under the Pujari room. That we were smuggling drugs in with the books. I mean, having Rasa Leelas, you know. We had to go, I remember myself and Jashamati Nanda had to go to every newspaper in Mumbai to get him to print our side of the story. Every one of them. And the one newspaper man, he gave us, it was called Mother India, was his newspaper. He gave us a left-handed compliment. He said, I know the reason why people are addicted to your prasadam. You put opium in it. You put opium in it. That's why they're addicted. So, in one sense, it was a compliment that he's admitting people are addicted. But it wasn't because it's opium. Because the same lips that touched the conch shell touched that prasad, touched that food. So we had to go, you know. And there was hell, you know, because no one, not one person came to our temple for 2 months. Some devotees were coming back from some place, and they were, they saw this crowd, they didn't know where it was, and they drove through, and they were attacked. They almost were killed. It was this crowd of protesters like that, you know. And the devotees were still in jail. All the main managers of the temple were still in jail, in the Santa Cruz prison, in the Santa Cruz jail. I was shipping, every day I would send the Maha Prasadam, you know, the 4 o'clock offering, I sent it to them. I kept all of it just for the extra, and I sent it to them. And I was hearing all kinds of stories of what was happening over there. Amazing stories. Because, you know, here we are being attacked from every different direction, yet there was they were doing fantastic preaching in the jail. It's just a regular city jail, you know, had three cells, had 180 prisoners in it. And so out of respect for our 12 devotees, all the prisoners vacated one cell and gave it just to the devotees for themselves. And the devotees, you know, sure that, you know, they had a whole morning program there, all in the mind. They'd have a whole Mangal Aarti, you know, with incense that wasn't, you know, in the mind. Then they do a Tulsi Puja. The Tulsi also wasn't there, except in the mind, you know, and everybody's circumambulating and you know, they were doing all kinds of preaching, having Bhagavatam class there, everybody's chanting there. Some fantastic preaching. I met one man who had become a life member in the jail. He was so impressed by the preachers, by the devotees. He was a Sikh who lived in England, who came back to India, got drunk in a bar, and was arrested for breaking a man's arm, and he was thrown in jail. And he met the devotees there, and he became a life member. So I heard so many stories of all this. I wanted to go see. So I came with the one shipment of prasadam, you know, and from 1 kilometer away, I could hear the kirtan. From a kilometer away, you know, 150 people chanting. You know, so I brought up, and I went paid there on one side of the bar, and I paid obeisances, and I almost threw up the floor. It was like, not clean. It was very, very, it was austere they were living in, you know, very austere. But they were, all the devotees in the prison were all in ecstasy, completely in ecstasy. And then, you know, then we had to do all kinds of connecting. We got involved with, the Vishwahanda Parishad involved, and, you know, the RSS. This RSS started doing their exercises in the yard next to us. And Janmashtami was coming. And not one person had come to the temple in 2 months. So we started doing heavy publication for Janmashtami, going out, you know, with pamphlets, the Victoria Station, every place. And the secret word was let out via the RSS that if these people interfere with our Janmashtami, then they would be taken care of by the RSS. Right? And then just a day or two before Janmashtami, the Sunday before Janmashtami, what happened was the governor of the state came for a visit. No one had come for 2 months. The governor of the state came for a visit to the temple. And then, either just before that or just after that, anyway, just before Janmashtami, we put a full-page advertisement in every newspaper in Mumbai. And all our biggest life, because by this time we got all our life members back on board, you know, the Maharaj of Udaipur, all the biggest members of the Vishnu Hindu Parishad, they all signed, all endorsing ISKCON. And then for the Janmashtami weekend, we had 1 lakh of people come. And that, we never turned back since then. So this is nothing. Nobody's trying to kill you yet. You know. So we should keep our courage, and specifically, we should be praying to Vamanadev, you know, reciting these prayers, you know, reciting these chapters, and, you know, specifically praying to him to be merciful and to return back to us the property that Madhu Pandit stole from Srila Prabhupada. You know, all the money and all the property, and give us back our good name. Because he's trying to, he's doing all his criminal activities in our name. Because Prabhupada is a good name, ISKCON is a good name, and he's using that name for his nefarious activities. So if we don't stop now, it'll just be worse later. And things are turning in our direction, you know. Now, I saw Dayaram is here. So that Dayaram is going to speak, is going to address, because he's the head. He's heading up the legal team, and he will explain. Is he going to explain to the whole congregation, or just to the whole congregation? He's going to, or is he has? He's going to, right? So you got to explain to the whole congregation, to give a summation without revealing any important details, which we wouldn't want people to know. But he'll give, because it's just a matter of time. Time is not on Mr. Pandit's side. On Mr. I knew him when he was Madhusudan Nair. I preached him when he was a bhakta. I arranged for his getting initiated. So, Punar Mushika Bhava. Yes, you have a question? Okay. Time is not his friend. Time is our friend. We just have to keep fighting, and we will win. So, but our legal team needs the support of the congregation, of the especially the initiated devotees, you know, and those who are aspiring to get initiated. That they should, you know, this is the time when we need you. The more prayer, the you know, we believe in the power of prayer. We should, you know. As I said, time is not on his side. The time factor is all powerful. Because why? Kalosmi aham. Time I am. and plus he's insulted. And when you read the Vamana Leela, so much information will be there. Why Vamana, why Bali, you know, why Devas got in trouble, why Bali got in trouble. He offended his guru. Right? By offending the gurus, by offending the Vaishnavas.
You can also you offended some devotees. Some Delhi devotees went for darshan, they did not order darshan.
Whatever the case might be. There's just like Sanjaya was explaining to Dhritarashtra. He said that because of Duryodhan's having Draupadi disrobed, it indicates that he will be destroyed, because those whom the gods would destroy, they first make crazy. So it was a crazy thing to do. It indicates that he will be destroyed. So 14 years seemed a long time to Bhima, for sure it seemed like a long time. But eventually those 14 years, to Draupadi and Bhima, it seemed like a long time. They wanted to kill him immediately. But 14 years ran out. 14 years ran out. Time was not on Duryodhan's side. So similarly, for Mr. Madhusudan Nair, time is not on his side. All he's doing is making more mistakes. More and more mistakes, and it just eventually it will happen. You know. But we want to grease the wheels, you know, on a slippery slope down. And that's why we want the devotees to please daily make it a part of your day before chanting your japa to at least recite a few verses from the Vamana Leela with that sankalpa. Alright? I think he's going to be speaking soon. Oh, yeah, Dairam and Varda Krishna over there. Alright, Srimad Bhagavatam Granta Raj Ki Jai.
Shamsundar Prabhu.